This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
98FM. Now, that's what I call sport podcast.
Now, for the next half an hour on the show, we're going to focus on the FAI and on the news on Friday. And I had to spend 4 hours there on Friday before our Christmas party and listen to, basically, the shocking, disgraceful, whatever word you want to use, revelations about the FAI accounts. And, you know, Nathan, as a journalist, and, you know, we cover all the games and the press conferences, and, you know, you're at times a little bit removed from, like, reacting to stuff or being emotional about stuff because, like, it's your job. And, you know, in the press box at the matches, we can't really scream and shout and cheer Ireland or whatever, or shout at the ref, because you've got to be professional and working impartial and whatever. But the other day, like, I was nodding my head, like, so many times listening to what went on there, and, like, to have actually been in that room and watch it firsthand, and even watch Paul Cook, the FAI's executive lead, trying to figure out how to work a PowerPoint presentation on a laptop in front of the world's media, and, you know, the IT guy trying to help him, and you're going, my God, like, it's, the words, like, escape you, really, because it's just, so I'm actually sad now, sad for the FAI, sad for the staff, sad for Irish football, and hopefully this is the start of, you know, a new FAI and stuff, but it can't get worse. And the Sunday newspapers have been trying to get their heads around what happened on Friday.
Yes, the Irish Sun on Sunday went with the headline, "The Party's Over," and they, of course, referenced Delaney's final years in charge. And there's been rumours on the amount of debt. I've heard 55 million, I've heard as much as 60 million.
It's 57, I think.
57, it's in that ballpark debt that the organisation now face. The Irish Mail on Sunday went with UEFA to boot out Delaney. They say that the international soccer body expected to expel John Delaney and that the FAI insist they won't allocate him tickets for future soccer ties. And, of course, the Sunday Independent went with Delaney's chickens finally come home to roost, and they're mentioning the FAI's credibility is completely shot following the controversy which emerged in the last few months, and they also dubbed him the most despicable character in the history of Irish sports. So some huge words there.
Yes, here, here, I would echo those sentiments hugely. Now, on Friday at the FAI press conference, I spoke to the FAI's president, Donal Conway, and the executive lead, Paul Cook.
I would say what I've said many times in the past, that the board I was a member of, as a collective, did not do its job well enough. I would say that that's recognised. We are on a very definite path to reform. That's very, very strongly the sense I get from my colleagues on this board. We had, if you recall, 78 recommendations in the governance review report. We have adopted 30 of them at this stage. With the arrival of the independent directors, another whole raft of those will be adopted, will be green-lighted. So the evidence is there. We bring this information to our council, who represent those same fans, that we're committed and definitely on
the road. I'm sure they're on their offices now reading the report. Some are in the room here now, and, you know, I'm sure it's been a very hard year for them or more. What would you say to them and the fears they have about their jobs?
Paul and I spoke to them during the week. We met them. We told them that today would be a difficult day in terms of laying the financials out, and that we would, they would obviously be the first stakeholder that we would have to come back to and engage with a view to the changes that will have to be made over time.
So do you feel that there will be people who work here that will lose their jobs?
Well, we think, we said to people there are going to be consequences, and we're not going to say anything today. First people that we will tell will be our staff.
I'm sure, you know, those meetings were difficult for everybody. And we've heard this week about the morale of staff here being on the floor, or words to that effect. How are the staff?
I mean, the way I look at it, how would I feel with what's gone on the last 8-9 months? How do I feel the work I've put in? The morale can't be good. But we're, today, as Don said, we're looking at, this is all the past. We're starting moving forward to the future now. This is the future. So we move upwards.
But unfortunately, the past will affect the future for people who work here.
Unfortunately, it does. Unfortunately. And we've laid it out there what it is.
And you feel that that would have an impact on the FAI moving forward and trying to correct those accounts and trying to improve, given you're going to have less staff?
I think as Donal said there, we've a great brand. It's a universal sport, most popular sport in the world. So I think, you know, that helps it.
And you also spoke about a 15-year mortgage for the Aviva Stadium. You might just explain that in a little more detail and why that decision was made.
Well, if anybody was knowing me, I said it 10, 12 years ago. I mean, to me, it doesn't make sense to have an asset which has a life of 30 or 40 years to be trying to pay it off very quickly. So that's just a prudent, normal business decision, I would say.
You mentioned the former CEO, and you know, he's been involved in much of this. He did say many times that the association will be debt-free by 2020. Clearly, those figures and statements are very, very different. Was he ill-advised? Why do you feel he made those comments as the person at that time in charge of the organisation? Because, you know, they were clearly very, very wrong.
Well, he made his statements in light of whatever information was available to him. All I can do is present the facts that are here today.
On the football, because, you know, at the moment, it's quite strange given those accounts that Irish football seems to be on the pitch in a very good place. There's confidence with the men's teams, the women's teams, the underage teams are doing very, very, very well. I'm sure you'd agree with that. What will the consequence be to the football teams, particularly the senior men's and women's teams, with the restructuring you're going to have to do moving forward?
Well, our plans have assumed there's no consequence on that.
There's none. So the hits will be taken elsewhere?
There will be consequences in certain areas.
Yeah, unfortunately, consequences more than likely for, you know, some or a lot of the FAI staff, whether they be redundancies or pay cuts as well. And, you know, they're the people I feel most sorry for, because the amount of fantastic people that work in the FAI and, you know, are tarred with the brush of what's gone on, which is totally wrong, and also, you know, now have to live with the consequences of what will happen moving forward. And it's just very, very sad now. That's I went from being, you know, outraged to angry, and now it's just sad, really. And unfortunately, you know, as Paul Cook said there, they will be the first to find out what's going to happen. And, you know, we hope that, and I hope, and I heard yesterday Niall Quinn speaking about hoping that the government could restore the funding for the simple reason to keep the staff there at least until after Christmas to see what they can do and, you know, try and get a new sponsor on board and you know, try and start to move things forward as well. And, you know, that was very, very good. And you can watch, by the way, Paul Cook and Donal Conway's full presentation on youtube.com/offtheball right now. Now, Daniel MacDonald is the head football correspondent with the Irish Independent newspaper, and he wrote a fantastic piece over the weekend with the title, "Why the John Delaney Era is the Worst Thing to Ever Happen to Irish Football." And on Off the Ball, Dan has been expanding on that for us.
This John Delaney era, as it will be known, you know, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to football in this country. Because even any positives during that era, I guess everything is jeopardised now by everything that hangs over at the FAI. That you talk about the lost decade. I mean, the decade that could be lost could be the next one.
That's what I mean.
You know what I mean? But also the last one too, in the sense that whatever about maybe some of the, I guess, reportage and you know, allegations of sort of personal excess and so on, that ultimately, like, the broader picture here was very avoidable. Like, there's been a decade of denial when it comes to the FAI's finances. And that is what I think jars so much, is that there would have been and I went to pretty much all of the AGMs, for example, when accounts were presented. Those AGM events were always presented as a good news story. There was interviews and statements and comments made about profits 9 years in a row, about that the FAI could be debt-free by 2020. And, you know, you're thinking here, well, hang on. I mean, just you look back to the sums at the start and the mistakes that were made when it came to the financing of the tickets to sell the Aviva, and what a sort of dreadful mistake that was. And But there seemed to be always this mad sense of, and it is that old statement about the pride coming before the fall, that there was never any sense of acknowledgement that maybe things weren't as rosy as were being portrayed. And in fact, anyone who sort of made statements to the contrary would have been ostracised or scoffed at or laughed at. I mean, I made a reference in the piece today, Catherine Murphy, 2-3 years ago, January 2017, John Delaney appearance in front of the Oireachtas Committee. Like most of the FAI dealings with the political classes over the past decade, they were sort of greeted like heroes. I mean, this whole portrayal of Shane Ross and, you know, Brendan Griffin and people such as that as reformers now is laughable, because actually there was plenty of reportage out there plenty of questions that could have been reasonably asked that people in authority weren't willing to ask. They were happy to just take at face value what they were told, that everything was fine, even though we know for a fact now, as was reported several times this year, I think the Sun at the start of the year, that the FAI were well known for their early drawdown of funding on an annual basis. Like, even there's just all these little signs that should have, you know, the alarm bells should have been ringing to some degree that this is a problem that people should be concerned about. But no, again, the message was there that we'll be okay. We'll be debt free. This is the message. And as I said, Catherine Murphy, 2017, raised the point that at the FAI AGM, why are there no questions? Why is it always this particular type of event? And at the time, the response from John Delaney was, well, you may be paying attention to media reports, but we give out our accounts to our members. We print our accounts, we put them out in the public domain. They're there for people to see. And I must say that sometimes, and I would be guilty of it, and I think it's a fair point that I would be very critical of people who didn't hold the FAI authorities to account, that why people didn't stand up and say stop. It would annoy me at those meetings. We didn't have these ovations, these sort of over the top gestures and sort of symbolic acts to sort of showcase our love for this great leader who was taking us in a particular direction. But I guess when you think about it, we're taking on trust a lot of stuff and information that was being presented to them. And what we have now is this sort of almost unprecedented situation where they've had to restate accounts. They've had to go back and say, this was the surplus that wasn't a surplus. These were the director's fees here. Well, actually, the figure was X, but actually it's Y. And when you take all of that into consideration, I would imagine that there probably is going to be a certain amount of embarrassment, but also anger out there. And I think a word that's also been used is a sense of betrayal as well.
Yeah, great stuff there from Dan McDonald. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much indeed, sir, for that. And you can hear more from Dan on youtube.com/offtheball. Now, Robbie Butler is an economics professor at UCC, and he's an expert in economics, obviously. And he's been speaking to Ger Gilroy and trying to break down exactly what this 57 million debt and the fact the FAI lost 9 million last year, what it actually means and if there's any possibility of recovery from it.
A number of headlines in terms of the 55 million figure that I think we've kind of known for about 24 hours. That was crystallised today and made clear. That's the outstanding debt at the FAI. There's a loss figure for last year, which is absolutely very stark and which suggests that the business is in trouble. Perhaps one of the key lines to take away is that Deloitte have said that they're concerned about the ability of the FAI to trade as a going concern. That was the one that struck me as the most important in all this, the fact that perhaps this might be the end of the FAI as it's currently constituted.
Well, I think there's a few elements to what you ask. I think at a general level, I think everybody that has an association or affiliation or a love of Irish soccer is very, saddened by what we saw today. The overall net liability figure is worrying for an association that turns over about 45 million euros a year to have a net liability of, 55 million is something that that should be of concern. I think, from the point of view of the viability of the Football Association, I think we have to be careful in terms of what Deloitte are recommending. Of course, they say that this is a company that mightn't be a going concern. I think, this is a little bit different to, say, normal private companies that, we might consider or we might look at. Because football in Ireland, well, it's administered by the Football Association, and whilst that's it is a private entity as such, it does have a public element. It receives money from the taxpayer. And it also has a public good. And the public good is something that, football fans and supporters are drawn to. So despite the fact that the association that administers the game is in financial difficulty, I don't think football in this country is, simply because it's owned by the people that play it, the people that volunteer, and the people at grassroots level.
Okay, I totally understand exactly the point you're making, that the sport itself will continue, but the administration of the sport by the FAI, we now see that those total net liabilities are 55 million. Why are Deloitte saying that they're concerned about the ability of the FAI to continue being a going concern?
Well, I think it's standard practice for any private company that would be in such a financial position to say that. I don't think there's anything out of the ordinary there. I think the worrying thing for the association is that, you know, an adjustment is going to be required. And I suppose just living in this country for the past decade, an adjustment was required because there was a certain amount of money coming in and there was a certain amount of money going out, and the money that going out was much more than was coming in. So if you look at the key stakeholders involved in the association, and if you look at the cost side of the business, by far the biggest is staffing. And I think this is something that's worrying and it's concern, particularly before Christmas, that, you know, if this company is to become in line, is to become viable and sustainable, it's probably going to mean, if not pay cuts, redundancies. Again, I would say, I mean, the Football Association is different in this regard, in the, so far as it doesn't have to be profit maximising. It certainly should be revenue maximising, so we should be trying to generate as much revenue as we can from the international teams, from sponsorship, from commercial and so on. But the objective should be to break even, and to break even with that constraint. So, you know, once we can break even, I think it becomes a different issue. It doesn't necessarily have to become profit maximising or make profit. In fact, it shouldn't. It should reinvest any money it makes into things like grassroots, into the League of Ireland, into underage football.
Talk to us about the 55 million then. I understand there's a lot of information to get through today, given that accounts for two separate years were published, and it's about 70-odd pages of quite detailed financial information to parse. But where did the 55 million come from?
It's largely bank debt, and some of the bank debt would have been the legacy of the Aviva, and I guess the issue with the Aviva was the Aviva Stadium was supposed to be debt-free by 2020, and that was something that we would have heard quite a bit. I guess some of this is a legacy of the crisis that Ireland went through. The Aviva happened to come on stream just as the Irish economy was collapsing, and much of the debt that is there now, it would never have been envisaged that Ireland would have been under such economic conditions at the time. So the objective to pay off much of that debt in the early years, simply it didn't come to fruition because the economy was in a completely different place. I guess the worrying thing now is that the mortgage on the Aviva has been extended until 2034, so that's a long way from where we thought we would have been.
Can I just add on that though, like, there's nothing actually wrong with having a debt associated with your stadium if you can pay off the debt. Like, everybody who has a mortgage understands that you pay your mortgage off over a period of time, you make sure the repayments are within your means to pay, and ultimately that's fine so long as the debt's serviceable, right?
Sure, but I guess the more worrying thing is that the mortgage was supposed to be paid by 2020, and now 14 years have been added to the mortgage. So what does that mean in terms of interest, in terms of the actual sustainability of the stadium in the long run? Because it's more than just the mortgage we have to pay back. The stadium gets older, it requires maintenance, and so on. And just particularly with interest on that, you know, that's essentially money that could be used for something else. There's an opportunity cost on it. So we're going to have 14 years of payments towards the stadium that could have been spent somewhere else. No, I do accept that, yeah, it's not a big an issue if it's manageable, sure, but it's going to have to be managed for, you know, 15 years more than was originally intended.
Yeah, I think that 2020 figure was always a strange figure to have been introduced to the conversation in anyway, because there was always that difficulty with the Vantage tickets. There was that debt. It seemed like it was a race to get that paid off for whatever reason, and maybe that will emerge in time with some of the other reports. But as an association, if the 55 million is largely bank debt and it's now going to be spaced over 15 years, does that give them some breathing space?
Sure, and some of it, I suppose, some of it is due to the fact, and this is the net liability, some of it is due to the fact that there was difficulties paying back bank debt recently, so something that would have appeared as a long-term liability now appears as a current liability. So, you know, once that debt becomes manageable, and we believe now that the association is renegotiating debt, and I mean, that's something that countries do. It's something that Ireland did quite successfully over the past 5-10 years. If that can happen, of course, it puts us in a better position. And I think this is part of the adjustment that the association is going to have to go through. So if you're a return a loss of nearly €9 million in 2018, we have to hope now that, okay, if this goes into 2019, that things will begin to recover in 20 and 21 and 22 because of the actions that have been taken. I guess, you know, going back to the international team, often people think of the FAI, they think of the senior men's international team. Obviously, it's a lot more than that. But that team is very, very important to the association in terms of revenue generation. You know, it's second only to commercial revenue. So the two games that you know, that are potentially ahead of us in Bratislava, and then, well, we don't know after that, but a final, it's of critical importance now, more so than from a footballing perspective, that we actually qualify for Euro 2020 because of the rewards associated with that in terms of broadcasting, commercial merchandising and so on.
You mentioned the loss in 2018, the €9 million loss in 2018. What were the key drivers behind that?
Yeah, sure. So there's two sides. Unfortunately, turnover is reduced by about €4 million, cost of sales, operating costs have actually risen. So what that does is it drives you to a position where you're about just €3 million to nearly €9 million in the red. I suppose, again, one caveat on that, the debt was about €5.5 million, and then there was grants to affiliates, development programs and so on. That consisted of about €3.5 million. So, I mean, that is something that could have been retained by the association, but wasn't. So it's pretty much a combination of less money coming in, more money going out. That's driven this figure to be €8.9 million.
That's the voice of Robbie Butter, who is an economics professor, should I say, in UCC in Cork, speaking to Jared Gilroy on Off the Ball. You can listen to that in full. It's a bit longer than the one we just played you on youtube.com/Off the Ball. You can watch it there, listen to it in our podcast section. Also an interview there with Niall Quinn, former Ireland international, who again summed things up very well and asked for the government's help to help the FAI. I think Niall Quinn will be a great candidate for the FAI CEO. I really do. And I know he's been involved in you know, a consortium about possibly, you know, helping run the League of Ireland, but I think he would definitely be a great man to actually run the FAI. So that's the bad news from the FAI, and we're going to finish the show after the break with a man called Ger Dunn. He's the FAI's head of performance analysis, works mainly with the senior team. He's a really interesting guy, and he'll join us next.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
You're very welcome back. Now, the FAI coaching conference took place in Carlow recently. I was there and I got some exclusive interviews. We brought you last week chats with Terry Connor and Vera Powell from the men's and women's senior international teams. And this week, it's the turn of Ger Dunn, who's the FAI's head of performance analysis. And he's a very interesting guy. And basically, his job, which he's going to explain in more detail to us now, is quite unseen, but fascinating.
Okay, hi Jamie. So I suppose the first thing is we have to look at ourselves. So we, in advance of games, what we do is we analyse our own players, then make them and pick a squad. When we play it in an opposition team, so for example we played Denmark on Monday night, we'll go through everything for them, whether that's players playing with their team, their club teams, set pieces, attacking threats, defending areas that we can exploit. The game is just broken down and into ways that we can actually take advantage of, or try to take advantage of. That's essentially what it is. In terms of then on match days itself, we take in multi-camera angle feeds and we break that down and we send feeds to the dugout. There's just so much going on. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I've just seen the presentation, so assume I know nothing because the listeners haven't seen what I've seen. Very interestingly, you said you watch each opposition team in full, like one match, 5 or 6 times.
Yeah, because guaranteed the first time you watch them, you're probably listening to the commentary, or you're watching maybe, say, the actual general kind of feel for the game. Next time then you watch them, you might see something different. So the more times you watch them, the more you see. But for me, from my point of view, the further I get into the games themselves, the more I'm starting to see individual players and individual trends and specific trends with the team rather than individual trends, but specific things that are happening that I can then the next time I watch them can start to look for that as well, because I feel that if I watch a team once, it's just not enough.
And you've already started in your analysis of Slovakia, who we're going to face in March, so you do have some time between now and March to get ready for that game and help the team. What will go into your time and your team of analysts' time in the next while to give Mick, Terry, Robbie and the players as much as they can get, as you can give them, should I say, on our next opponents?
Yeah, so first things first is we use the Huddle platform for sharing with the players. at this stage, I think, of the last 10 games up on that. So that went up fairly quickly after we knew we were going to play them. Haven't done anything yet on Bosnia and Northern Ireland. But so the first thing is to get those games up. What I'll do then is I'll use the scouting platforms that we have, take some information off them, add that to it, or sorry, take that in into our analysis software, start to watch the games, look for trends, and then break the game down into attacking, transition to defend, defending, transition to attack, and all the set plays, and then get into the individual players as well. So it's basically I'm trying to build a story of the team. The coaches will generally look at those games as well and huddle in between now and when we meet up. Haven't got a date off Mick yet to when we're going to meet up. It'll probably be next week. I'd say we'll have our initial meeting. We'll watch their most recent game, probably watch them against Wales because it's relevant to us, style of play, similar type players. Probably watch that first, and then we'll go away, have some thoughts on that. We'll start to figure out, kind of start to formulate a plan. So I start to get what's inside Mick's head in terms of what he'll start to want to look for. At that stage, I will have already seen him a couple of times anyway as well, so there might be something that jumps out that didn't happen in the Wales game. I say just make sure you keep an eye on this as well. Then we'll meet probably again. We may meet again before Christmas, and we'll probably meet 4 or 5 times in January. And by the time we get to March, we'll know them fairly well.
I was also fascinated to hear that you analyse the referees and who the referees are going to be. Why do you do that?
That's become probably less of something that we do nowadays. So John Ward in the referees department is fantastic. He provides me the information. We generally only get the referees for a competitive game 2-3 days in advance, but John knows them all. He has an idea of what their traits are. But it's probably less of that we're doing now than we would have had a few years ago, because UEFA have put in fantastic mentoring programs for referees, and it's almost now that the referees don't really change. Where it would have been in the past is you're keeping an eye on it. Is a referee very strict on descent? You know, is he very strict on contact? But it seems now like they just seem to be almost equivalent at that level that we're playing against. So, for example, when we played the other night against Denmark, when we played against New Zealand, we did quite an inexperienced referee, and then when we played on Monday night, we had quite an experienced referee. He's done a lot of top games, so you're knowing what you're going to get from him. He's not going to favour one team. He's not going to be under pressure with the home crowd or the away. You know, he's not going to favour one team over the other, and their stats usually add up to that. So, but yeah, we still do that because sometimes you need to know their personality.
And we often see when the rugby games are on, the coaches and the team of both teams in the coaches' boxes at the Aviva Stadium, wherever the game is. That's one of the places where you'll be on a match day. You might explain to me how match day works for you and the analysis team.
Yeah, so on match day, the equipment is all sent to the stadium early. Martin Doyle, who has been working with us for this campaign, Martin sets up in the stadium. He gets into the stadium around 1 or 2 o'clock in the day, sets up all of the feeds. So we take 5 feeds from the TV company, TV broadcasters, NAP. So Adam Scarf sets us up with all that. He's a fantastic guy. With that, we take the main feed that you will see at home on the TV. You'll take a camera one feed, which is essentially the same feed without any replays. One behind the goal, so in the south stand, the one on top is a very high view and really good cameraman up there. We'll take the 2 18-yard boxes as well, and then I'll put a cameraman. So Aidan McDonough is our cameraman that's going that's up in the gantry as well, and he's taking a wider tactical view, which is what a lot of coaches want. It's the 20 outfield players, and they are in the picture all the time. And then lastly, then I'll put a camera operator in the north stand, which is the smaller stand, but still a good height up for us, and they'll take the opposition end. So all in all, we'd have a panorama feed as well from a GoPro up with Aidan. So that's there. In terms of the game then, once we're set up and the game kicks off, Martin will live tag the game for me, and I'll watch the game, and I'll have those 5 feeds coming in. So at any stage I can review from a different angle. I don't get the feeds from the 2 camera operators that I have until after the game, because it's just we're set up differently. But we'll also have a feed going into the dressing room, so any tagging that Martin does is in the dressing room as well. So if half time a player wants to look at something, the head coach wants to look at something, it's just done. So the stadium are fantastic, they set us up for that. And then lastly, then we'll send a feed down to the technical area, so generally sits between Alan Kelly and Robbie. So you might see a little iPad there, and they have that.
and they can review any of the instances. If there's an injury, the medical staff can review it, and then the tagging that we do as well goes in there. So if they wanted to have a quick look at the five corners against us in the first half, they can do that. So it helps to inform their decisions as the game is going on, helps them see what's happening. We're communicated up as well, so we have headsets. You see Robbie and Alan and Terry with the headsets, and they're talking to me all the time. So sometimes, because I have a higher view, I can see things a little bit better, and they might not have been able to see something, so they might say it to me. And again, they're getting the TV feed down there because it's a replays and that as well. It helps us a little bit more. However, I might have seen something that they haven't seen at the far end of the pitch, or something happened in a transition and TV camera hasn't picked it up, so I can then shoot that down to them. I can send that footage down to them if they need it.
And to roll back to pre-match, when the team comes in, the opposition team comes in maybe 90 minutes before kickoff, you personally have a very important role in the dressing room in trying to, you know, put together who'll play right back, who'll play left back, who'll take the corners, who'll be in the box, who the players should mark. And that, at the top level of football, is a very, very important one, because the players are so used to it now. If you tell Shane Duffy number five is going to be in the box and number five is staying back, he's looking around going, who do I need to mark? And Mick McCarthy and the coaching staff put a lot of importance and trust in you to do that.
Yeah, and that's the same across the board with our analysts. What we, again, that's with Mick and Terry, that's all agreed in advance with the players. So for example, when we played on Monday night, John Egan would have been picking up Carr, Simon Carr, because he likes to get across the front post area. He's quick and he needs to be picked up on the run, so John is quick enough to go with him. And in that scenario, if Carr then wasn't playing, well then who else is going to make that run for them? So that information, when the team comes in, that might need to be changed. But it, a lot of times it's just confirming, yeah, he is playing, he is going to make that run, and John, that's your job. When John went off the other night at half time, it's a quick reminder to Kieran Clark that, Kieran, here's Kieran's run, make sure you pick him up. So they've got to deal with all the tactical information again as well, but they all are very diligent. Players are very diligent about set plays and not conceding and not being the one to put their hand up afterwards and say, I lost him, it was my fault. So the players want to get that information. So Kieran will come to me and say, just show me that run against one more time. Okay, fine, yeah. And that might be in a previous one, or he might want to see that from the first half in case anything changed. But again, each of the players would be in detail, and once the team comes in, generally speaking, we get it fairly right. You know, you'd be definitely getting 10 out of 11 right. So if there is a change, then you're just providing that information to players. But because they've worked on it during the week, they've gone through that in the sessions, they've been shown how to do it in the video, and then they just follow the players. They just follow the rules, and that's hopefully leads to success.
Yeah, that's Ger Dunn, the senior analyst for the Irish senior team and the FAI. Fascinating presentation and interview, Ger. Thanks for your time, and the best of luck for the next few months and in that game against Slovakia.
Thanks, Jamie.
Yeah, on a terrible, terrible week for the FAI and Irish football. Very nice to hear from one of the FAI's very, very, very interesting staff and talented staff, like all the FAI staff are.
98 FMs. Now that's what I call sport. Get the full show every Sunday morning from 9, only on 98 FM.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.